Well, I recently heard this story told by the well-known actor Tate Donovan. He was out on the town one evening several years ago, about to meet up with some friends. He encounters a young couple who's also out on the town for a nice night out. Now, they are all decked out. The young man is wearing a very nice suit and tie, and his girlfriend is wearing a beautiful dress. She's even wearing a corsage. Now, it appeared to him that this was going to be a very special night for this young couple. The couple spots Tate Donovan. The young man points to a camera he is carrying and asks the actor, "Picture?" Well, the actor has had this experience happen many times to him before and has understandably grown a bit tired of interacting with the public in this way. But he figures they're young, and this is apparently a big night for them, so he obliges. He goes and stands next to the young woman and anxiously waits for the young man to take the picture. He doesn't have all night here. Come on. The young man hesitates a bit, so the actor puts his arm around the young woman and strikes a friendly pose with her. He looks at the young man and says, "Okay, we're ready. You can take the picture." The young man timidly takes the picture. Tate Donovan says something appropriate to the couple, and they look at one another kind of puzzled. The young man then asks the actor, "Can you take the picture of the two of us?" pointing to himself and his girlfriend. It is at that moment that Tate Donovan realizes this young couple doesn't have a clue as to who he is. They don't realize that he's a famous actor. All they wanted was for him, Tate Donovan, to take a picture of the two of them on their special night out. They didn't want a picture with them with this stranger, kind of weird older guy. Tate Donovan thought so highly of himself that, of course, when they asked picture, he thought, of course, they wanted it with him. Tate Donovan thought of himself as living on higher ground. And interestingly enough, that is where we catch up with Jesus this week in Luke. Jesus has been teaching and healing people throughout the region of Galilee, performing miracles, teaching, preaching, and healing people of their illnesses. He's become the most well-known Galilean in decades. He has large crowds of people following him around. But now he's back in his hometown of Nazareth, in his home temple, and they want to see him in person. His friends and local townspeople are so excited to see him and hear him in person. This is their homegrown boy. Heck, this is Joseph, the carpenter's son. I can imagine the locals saying something like this: "You know, Joseph worked on my house. He built and installed that new front door I had put on. He used to work, you know, Jesus used to work with his dad, you know. I think Jesus was there helping him when Joseph installed that door in our house. I'm pretty sure he was there." As Jesus starts his message at his hometown temple, the people are right there with him, listening to his every word, nodding in agreement as he speaks, marveling at his wisdom. This is our hometown boy. And when he sits down and speaks more, their agreement turns to outrage. You see, Jesus had the audacity to say that God would include all people in God's kingdom. In our reading from Luke, Jesus cites two instances where God chose foreigners over the faithful Jews. Jesus is pointing out to his hometown crowd that not just the Jews, but the Gentiles, the unclean, even the dreaded Romans might be included in God's kingdom. Now, for the Jews of Nazareth, you couldn't say anything worse. These were struggling people. Nazareth was a little small backwater town. The only thing the people of Nazareth had going for them was their Jewish heritage. Now, they may have been poor monetarily, but they were rich in spirit and were God's chosen people. They saw themselves as being better than the non-Jews because they were specifically chosen by God. For their favored son, Jesus, to come home and tell them that they were not any more important to God than those awful Gentiles, those dirty Samaritans, those power-hungry Romans. Wow, that was the absolute worst thing you could say about them. They were angry beyond belief. They knew that they were entitled people, and they believed that they were the only people chosen by God. And no one else was worthy to be part of God's kingdom. They believed that they were on higher ground, and they were on much higher ground than anyone else. They were so angry at Jesus, they wanted to push him off a cliff. They wanted to kill their homegrown boy for speaking what God had asked him to say. In our reading from Jeremiah this morning, we're reminded that God sometimes will call the most unlikely people, the most unexpected, perhaps even someone in our minds who seems totally unqualified to speak the truth to all of us. In Jeremiah, he picks a boy, a young man, really, to go and speak God's word, to speak God's truth to the people. Jeremiah is young with little or no formal education. He has no standing in the community. He has no credentials in the eyes of the people that he was speaking to. But that's who God sends, not who they expected. And if Jeremiah was to come today, I don't think we would expect it either. Jeremiah just didn't fit the model of a spokesperson for God. For a number of years, I have ridden my bike in the Grand Fondo bicycle ride that happens here in Sonoma County in late September or early October. It's a wonderful ride, and it's so much fun that I invite 7,500 of my best friends to join me on the ride. Bill and Nancy Morgan are always there with me. For those that ride in the Fondo, you have a choice of three different routes you can take. There's a 37-mile ride that goes to Occidental. There's the Medio ride that's about 67 miles, and then there's the Grand Fondo, which is over 100. I've never been brave enough to do the Grand Fondo. The Medio is enough of a challenge for me. The first few years I did the ride in about the same length of time, just under 6 hours. So on the third year I did it, I made a goal for myself to do at least 30 minutes better, do it in 5.5 hours or less. I was determined to set a new time record for myself. I trained especially hard that year, and it was a perfect day for riding. So as I started the ride that year, I was confident that I would achieve my goal. I had a perfect strategy, and I was going to stick to it. At the first rest stop outside of Occidental, I was right on track. At the rest stop after the big hill climb after Coleman Valley Road, I was doing even better than I had hoped for. And as I got back into West Santa Rosa, I knew I was not only going to achieve my goal, but I was going to shatter it. And somehow, somehow to my surprise, many people knew that I was shattering it as well. For within a few seconds after I made that final turn into Finley Park, spectators lining the finish line broke out in loud applause and were offering encouragement and cheering me on. Or at least I thought so. Now, I thought to myself, well, why wouldn't they be there to applaud my accomplishment? I was shattering my previous record. And I was sure, I wasn't sure how, but I was sure that somehow they knew that was the fact as well. But oddly enough, the cheering did not stop when I crossed the finish line. People did not swarm over to congratulate me. In fact, it seemed that the cheering and applause only got louder after I had finished. And it was only after I got off my bike and turned around Then I realized what all the cheering and applause was really for. There, less than 200 yards behind me, was the actor Patrick Dempsey. Now, I had no idea at the time who Patrick Dempsey was, but I was quickly told that he was a television star, a well-known and accomplished actor. Heck, he played a doctor on TV. He was good-looking, younger than me, and the spectators, especially the women, thought he was the greatest. And they were so proud of him for, you know, this accomplishment that he had done, that finishing this huge race. But I thought to myself, I finished in front of him. And he's much younger than I am. But make no mistake, the applause were all for him. I had given it my all. I had trained hard, didn't walk or even stop at all up that steep climb up Coleman Valley Road like I had seen so many others do. I had planned out how I could achieve something great and did it. And no one else even noticed. I was disappointed and even a bit angry. But I was reminded that good looks, youth, and star power, none of which I possess, goes a long way. And even though I had done really well, a lot of other people, people a lot older than me, had finished way before I had. All those applause, all those words of praise, I was thinking way too highly of myself. I had placed myself on higher ground. I thought I was more important and entitled than Patrick Dempsey or any of the other riders who finished behind me. But when I put myself on that higher ground, what I was really doing was putting myself on shaky ground. It is only when we can show gratitude and give thanks for all that we have and put God first in our lives, that's the only time we can be truly on solid ground. Putting themselves on a higher ground than the other people got the Jews in Nazareth in trouble, just as it got the actor Tate Donovan, who was asked to take the picture, in trouble. And it got me in trouble. Putting ourselves on higher ground can bring about disappointment, but even worse, it can bring about anger. When we allow ourselves to get angry about something that we think we are entitled to, that only we have a right to, or we hear something spoken that we find uncomfortable to hear, we can so often find ourselves reacting in a negative way. When we get angry, we get less grateful. And when we get angry, our family doesn't want to be around us. Co-workers keep their distance, and even our fellow church members go out of their way to avoid us, trying to separate us from the rest of God's people can really cause us to lose sight of God and what is important in life. Higher ground is shaky ground. I read a study recently that was done at Stanford University. And oddly enough, the study was about potato chips, of all things. The study found, not surprisingly, that the potato chip manufacturers often offer several different brands that they market to their customers to attract different demographic groups. They hope to attract the more affluent buyers by appealing to their attitude of superiority, by their desire to be on higher ground. The study found that the aspiring affluent want to be noticed. They especially want to be noticed by the less affluent. When the less expensive chips were advertised, they used words like fresh, light, basic, and extra on their packaging. Pedestrian, simple words, nothing fancy, nothing exotic. The more expensive chips mentioned why they're so much better. And they used words like natural, savory, culinary, and gourmet to describe them. And they touted that their chips were hand-raked. Now, I don't know what that means, but it certainly sounds expensive. But even more importantly, they listed what they were not. They weren't fried or greasy. They had no MSG or artificial colors or chemicals added to them. By listing what was not included, it added to their superiority. And yet, the finished potato chips were nearly identical in their actual ingredients. The manufacturer took advantage of the human desire to feel superior over other people, and they do it because it helps them to sell more of their expensive potato chips. So as a result of their understanding of human behavior, we pay more for the same thing because we want to be on higher ground and we want to be better off than everybody else. So not only does our idea of entitlement lead us to be angrier and less grateful, it also costs us more money. Henry Ward Beecher said, "Pride slays thanksgiving, but a humble mind is the soil out of which thanks naturally grows. A proud man or woman is seldom a grateful man or woman, for he never thinks he gets as much as he deserves." In our reading from Luke, Jesus quotes the prophet Isaiah, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Well, I don't know about you, but so often I realize that I too have been held captive, that I am blind, and that I am anything but free, and I long to hear the good news. We live in a society that encourages living in excess. More is always better, seems to be our motto. We often view someone who is angry as someone who is a strong, powerful leader. And we view being grateful and humility as being signs of weakness. Jesus came so that we might be set free from the desperate society the desperate situation society often places us in. Jesus came so that we will no longer be blinded by the values of our society and our world. Jesus came so that we will no longer be held captive by wanting to be on higher ground than others. And Jesus came so that we will no longer feel obligated to live the life that is so often offered in this world. No, Jesus came to show an alternative way to live our lives and to live with one another, a way that will truly lead to happier, more fulfilling, more meaningful, more rewarding lives. He brings us that good news. So the questions that we have to ask ourselves is, are we ready to follow his lead, or are we more comfortable following the lead of the world in which we live? The choice is ours: higher ground or solid ground. Amen.